But then I saw him. Face to face. Down on that planet. And I couldn't fight it anymore. I remember now. I remember it all. We needed to infiltrate your ship. Learn your secrets. You were willing to betray your captain to protect your people. I sacrificed my body and mind to protect mine. I have the human's face, but inside I remain Klingon.
Klingon?
I remain Vork, son of none, the torchbearer.
No. You're Ash Tyler. We're gonna get back to Discovery and stay with Dr. Culber.
Dr. Culber saw past this feeble body into the heart and mind of a warrior. Which is why I killed him.
Welcome to Simply Syndicated's Discovery After Show, your place for a detailed analysis of each episode of Star Trek Discovery. Now here are your hosts, Sean Ray and Rick Tatrow.
Hello everyone and welcome to Simply Syndicated's Discovery After Show. My name is Sean Ray and tonight we're going to be discussing the 11th episode of Star Trek Discovery's first season, which was titled The Wolf Inside. It was written by Lisa Randolph and directed by T.J. Scott. And joining me on the mic, first and foremost, is co-host of the program, Rick. How are you, sir?
I am just dandy, sir. Thank you very much.
And my friend and the co-host of another podcast I do called Cosmic Potato, John Irons. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks. How are you?
I'm doing good. And joining us this week as our guest is the host of the Fandom Podcast, Brandon Uccio. How are you doing, sir?
Doing good. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. It's great to have you. Before we begin, we're going to do something a little bit different. We're going to play a short game. This is something that we do on Cosmic Potato a lot. But have you guys ever played Mad Libs?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm going to have to remember nouns and verbs and adjectives and stuff.
Right. I have a paragraph in front of me. And before I read the paragraph, I'm going to ask you guys to provide some adjectives, nouns, verbs, and that kind of thing. And hopefully it'll be entertaining. And if it's not entertaining, it was John's idea.
It seemed like it's whatever. I'm sure it's going to go great.
Okay, so I'll go around the virtual circle. I'll start with Brandon. Brandon, give me an adjective.
Adjective. This is the describing word, right?
Yes.
Hulking.
Say that again?
Hulking, like the Incredible Hulk, just like giant.
All right, I thought you said halting. I was like, what? Okay, hulking. All right. Rick, let me have a noun.
Proper noun or just a noun?
Just a noun.
Chair.
All right. John, let me have a body part.
The red ganglia.
All right. And Brandon, give me another adjective.
Another adjective. Let's stay with the same theme and let's do green.
All right. All right. Rick, let me have another noun.
Arthropod.
Arthropod. And John, give me an adjective.
Shiny.
All right. Brandon, give me a drink.
Well, you're at it, give me one too.
Yeah. Let's go with Diet Coke.
All right. And Rick. Okay. Yeah, Rick, give me an adjective.
Unfathomable.
Ooh. That's one of those 12th grade words.
I've been reading some Lovecraft lately.
And John, give me a plural noun.
Tribbles.
All right. Okay. Here is the paragraph. My name is Gabriel Lorca. Now, you can tell that my kids didn't do any of these because Butt Cheeks isn't in here anywhere. Okay. My name is Gabriel Lorca, and I am the hulking captain of the USS Discovery. I recognize that life isn't all puppies and chairs. And sometimes you just have to grab it by the threat ganglia and show it who's boss. The green brass running Starfleet may mean well, but they can't see the whole arthropod. And I don't have time to draw them a shiny map while they're sipping their Diet Coke. People are either useful or they're unfathomable tribbles. So there you go, Mad Libs.
That actually kind of works.
Yeah.
It does work for Lorca.
Yeah, exactly. They don't have Diet Coke in the 23rd century. I don't guess. I don't know.
They better.
Seems a little unhealthy for the future, but with the new.
It's all Coke Zero and Zima.
That's right. Zima.
No, it's Klingon. It's Klingon Zima. So if it's not blood wine, would it be like plasma wine? Is that what we're
right?
Blood orange wine.
A little light on the blood. Yeah. Okay, so as far as this episode goes, let's just go around the circle and see what everybody kind of had and what their overall feeling was about The Wolf Inside. We'll start with our guest. Brandon, what'd you think about this episode?
It was entertaining. It basically confirmed everything that everybody had been talking about. Like, all the speculation kind of came all at once and is like, yep, I'm pretty sure this is how it's going. It made me understand that this show is not necessarily targeted towards the Star Trek enthusiast, but trying to maybe hopefully make new ones.
Yeah.
But yeah, I enjoyed it, but it wasn't, it didn't tickle the sweet spot of this Star Trek nerd.
Okay. All right, Rick, what'd you think?
Remember how last week I said Discovery keeps doing things I don't like and making me like it? That didn't happen this week. I'm not going to say I hated the episode, and I just finished my second watch this afternoon because for one reason or another, it got too late last night for me to watch it twice. And I also needed to cool down because I was not a happy camper when this episode ended. Like Brandon just said, it's pretty much everything we expected happened. And since the MO of Discovery up until this point has been, oh, wow, I was so wrong about that. To have the entire freaking episode be, oh, yeah, we got that one, we got that, yep, they did that, okay, we were right about that. And they've also, and we'll go into this in more detail later, but they've also started doing the thing with the Mirror Universe episodes that makes me hate them, which is the plotline calisthenics necessary to get everybody we see in the main show on screen in the alternate universe in some way. And it just starts really... There, here you go. Yeah. Let's move on.
I agree with both you guys. I was entertained by the episode, and I think there's something about this show that I like the episode when I first watch it, and then when I watch it the second time is when I get a few things that just kind of irk me a little bit. But so when I watched the show, I wasn't keeping notes or anything. I was just watching the episode, and I enjoyed what I saw, but there were a couple of things like what you were talking about, people showing up that it didn't really make sense for them to be there. And we're going to talk about all that kind of stuff. But, I told John last night right after I had seen the episode that every episode is the best episode. And when I watched it the first time, I really thought, I thought this was a great episode. And I went back and watched it again, and there was just a couple of things that just didn't sit right with me that we will talk about, but I'll have to give the episode a solid B. I'd have to give it a B. But John, what'd you think?
I guess I'm the odd man out on this one. It wasn't one of my favorite episodes, but I didn't dislike it, because for me, I mean, yes, I agree with you. We definitely, you know, we're checking off boxes, and you know, we got everything we ordered on the menu. But I appreciate that. Not because, aha, we figured it out, but because they didn't drag it out the way that would have been, to me, the sin of it. Not that they did it and that we predicted it, but if it took them 5 episodes for the big reveal that we all knew, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. The Ash thing was kind of dragged out between the last episode and this episode.
Yeah, but that's just 2 episodes.
Yeah. Last episode, he was semi-activated,
and then he was, you know, more fully activated.
Yeah.
So, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, if he had been having his Jekyll Hyde struggle for, like, another 2 or 3 episodes, I would have been, you know, I would have been very upset. But, I mean, not that the storyline is over, but that chapter of the storyline is done. And the other thing, that other big mystery box is opened. And, yeah, I'm okay with it. And as far as the people who showed up at the meeting, fine, whatever. That kind of makes sense that they would be trying to build an alliance against humans, fine. And the one who showed up at the end, I'm curious as to how they're going to make it happen. But even if they don't put a lot of effort into it, I'm still fine with it. I definitely hear where you're coming from, but it doesn't bother me that much, depending on how that person is utilized.
Well, like I said, if it hadn't been all along, every time we thought something was going to go one way, and then they did a complete 180 to what we expected. If this was DS9, if this was DS9 or TNG, and it, you know, all of the reels would, we guessed it, we knew that was coming. But they've been so good about outsmarting us up till now, that while, you know, yeah, the reveal at the end when the Emperor shows up, we're spoiling, right? Yeah, we're not worrying about spoilers anymore. When Giorgio shows up, yeah,
that spoiler. Damn it!
it was like, yep, we knew it was her. But in the back of my head, I'm going, I wish it had been I wish they had done something we weren't expecting.
She was, you know, I guess like one of the top nominees. But it really, I mean, there were probably 3 kind of consistent theories. Like, I mean. There were a few that were kind of out there, like Harry Mudd, you know. It's not unreasonable that it would have been one of. And honestly, if it had just been a complete stranger, we would have joked.
Yeah,
you know, it would have been someone we had to recognize at least a little bit.
Yeah,
and I think that when they actually made these episodes, they probably thought that they were being a little more clever than they. I don't think they anticipated how much people were going to scour the internet for theories and things like that, and that people were going to figure this stuff out. Now, the stuff with Vok, yeah, they started to tell us that 2 episodes ago, you know, when he started having those flashes and all that kind of stuff. And then last week, they pretty much told us without actually coming out and saying it, you know. And then
I'm actually going to disagree with you on that one. Vok, after I saw this and I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. That's what we all thought. I've been thinking about the previous episodes, and the cinematography kind of gives it away. There are ways that they shoot Vok that the cinematographers do it the exact same way for Tyler. And so so going back and watching it again, it just adds a little bit more like, oh, that really is telegraphing this. And I'm going to say that the cardinal sin of this episode was they telegraphed the entire thing through marketing, even.
Yeah.
Because since day one, they've been saying, this is going to be the story about 2 ships. These are going to be the main characters. And then after the second episode, we're all like, this is nothing what they said it was going to be. And we decided that we liked it. Well, they've given us 9 more episodes, and then they basically said, oh, just kidding. You know all that marketing stuff that we said about this being about these 2 ships and about these people here? It's actually going to be about that. And so they did the 180, and then they did another 180, and we're right back to where we started. And that was what – I feel like that's the cardinal sin of this episode.
They lied to us by telling us the truth.
Yeah, and technically, I guess it would be three ships because you got the Shenzhou and then the Mirror Shenzhou and the Discovery.
Well, I do have to say, I'll say a couple of good things about the episode before I continue to crap all over it. I like that. I was surprised to see Ash go full Valk. I thought we were going to get a Gollum thing all the way through the rest of the series.
Yeah, I would have been annoyed. I'm pleased that they did.
And that kind of, that's the kind of sort of mistaken identities thing that really bugs me. So I'm glad that they dealt with that right away, that they got rid of the did Stamets kill Culber right away. I loved the stuff with Tilly and Saru and Stamets. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the thing that, that Stamets did, that's cool. I think that's going to have some interesting ramifications. It's not a bad, nobody did a bad job in the episode. The writing is solid, for the most part. I don't think there was a whole lot of, hackneyed dialogue. I could have done without Burnham's narration at the beginning, but they at least made that make some sense. Michelle Yeoh, just awesome as the Emperor. And I read that that sword she's carrying, or not, no, it was on After Trek, that sword she was carrying, she helped design it. It's like the prop man was making it, and he like showed it to her, and she's like, no, this needs to be different. This, because she's a master swords person and martial artist and stuff. So,
What was it? Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Yeah.
I was thinking how awesome would it be if she was actually, if it was the Green Destiny and it had just been passed down.
Yeah.
1,000 generations.
You know what I just realized? I would love to see, and it probably will never happen, but I would love to see a movie or a TV show where Michelle Yeoh and Ming-Na Wen had to fight together. I could die a happy man after seeing that.
John, did you summarize
as an Asian?
Episode? Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, as an Asian, I know so many white people that would think it was special effects because you got two of the same person, right?
Yeah.
Because they probably get mixed up more than almost any other Asian actress pair in Hollywood.
John, did you summarize the episode?
I did.
Okay, go ahead.
No, you didn't.
Well, we all did, really. But wait, here we go.
Is this an editing thing I'm unaware of and I just blew it?
This episode picks up a couple of days after the previous one. Burnham, Tyler, and Lorca are still aboard the Mirror Shenzhou. They have the data that they need, but they have to get it back on board the Discovery to decipher it. Burnham's in command. Tyler is her body man, if you know what I mean. And Lorca is being constantly tortured in the agony booth. And all three are starting to fray around the edges, although weirdly Lorca is showing it the least. They aren't sure how much more they can take, and when they receive an order from the mysterious Emperor, not so mysterious at this point, to wipe out a nearby base of rebel aliens. This show, Discovery, continues to thread the needle of setting up questions and resolving them, perfectly surfing the wave of internet theories, being buoyed by them without being crushed under the weight of them. I know we issued a spoiler warning. This is supposed to be before we did all the spoilers, guys. I know we issued a general spoiler warning, but at this point I take it as a personal challenge to try to review these episodes without any spoilers. In that vein, I'm going to present this review as a Best Day, Worst Day nominees. Best Day, Valk, for winning a major fight. Worst Day, Tyler, for losing a major fight. Best Day, also Valk, for winning a major fight. Worst Day, Tilly, for endangering the life of a friend when she tried to help. Best Day, Sarek, for not being a dick. Worst Day. Worst Day, Lorca, because of all the torture.
But he seems to like it.
Yeah. It doesn't seem to bother him.
Yeah.
He
may be building his own agonizer booth when he gets back to the prime universe.
Simultaneous best day and worst day, Stamets, for going where no man has gone before, except apparently Stamets. But without a doubt, the winner is as follows. Worst day, Michael Burnham, for pretty much everything that happened to her this episode. And best day for Michelle Yeoh for one of the best entrances in Star Trek history.
All right. Yeah, this was a Lorca light episode. I think he was only in two scenes. And I did, I'll steal the joke from After Trek because they showed the scene from next week when Michael is giving him like a, some kind of a concoction to help him with the pain of the agonizer booth. Like, oh, right, why didn't you give me that 2 days ago? But okay. So yeah, it's been 2 days since the last episode. Even though to hear Michael's monologue at the beginning, it sounds like she's been in there for 6 months. But Stamets is found rocking Culber's body, saying something about trees. What was he saying about trees?
It's a forest, and you can see the trees.
Oh, okay. Like, you can't see the forest for the trees. But Michael Burnham... before we go to that, I was pretty sure that when we saw Stamets sitting there holding Culber's body that they were going to assume that he killed him.
Yeah.
I mean, we kind of theorized that last week, but Saru basically said it, you know, that basically he killed him. And then, you know, Tilly is saying, well, this isn't really him, all that kind of stuff. So I think that they'll, like Chris said last week, they've got, in Star Trek, they've got security cameras everywhere. I mean, just look at the security footage and see who killed him. But, you know, that's just...
Well, see, just not in the sick bay because of all the privacy implications.
Nah. Well, yeah, that's true.
Well, we don't know... Again, we don't know what Ash did. He might have... I think they said something about there was like a power surge or something because that also is how they explained that his little field was down that Stamets could have gotten to him. Yeah. Because he was like an isolation bubble. I'm not using the right terminology, but you know what I'm saying.
Force field.
There was a force field up, right. And so there was some kind of power something that knocked the field down that allowed him to get out and presumably kill Culber. And that same phenomenon could have taken out whatever security feed they had.
Well, Culber took that field down because we saw Culber take the field down when
know that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the weird thing is what I didn't notice until my second viewing is that Stamets and Culber were not in sickbay. They were in a hallway. One of those bridges that connect the two rings. That's where they were found.
Okay.
So did Stamets bring Culber there or did Tyler drag the body somewhere and then Stamets found him?
I think Stamets is still effectively blind, right?
No, he's not blind. He's just not seeing the plane he's on for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah, he's seeing everything. I think. And that's what's messing. He's seeing all the universes at once. And that's what's messing with his brain. But Michael Burnham can't go ahead, John, I'm sorry.
Did the techno babble, as far as what was happening to Stamets, bother anybody? The bio babble.
The one part of it did. The laser photons are, as soon as they said that, I checked out. Because I love techno babble, and I love the fact that Star Trek has, from TNG on, at least made an effort to sound plausible.
Right.
You know, even if they're just pulling shit out of their ass, you know, making up particles out of nothing, at least there's some consistency to the tech. What Tilly was spewing in that scene made no sense from any perspective, and so I just kind of ignored it.
Yeah, I felt like it was way more made up explanation than you needed, because we know that his brain is changing. You're saying that, you know, it's because he's basically, he needs to reconnect with the spores. That's like, you could have simplified a lot. Like, you took a much longer route and, you know, recalculating. You didn't need all that. You could have just turned right and we'd have been right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had to rewind.
Well, and the amount of times.
Go ahead, Brandon. No, go. Sorry.
I was just gonna say, the amount of times that I've heard a warp bubble compared to a balloon on Star Trek, like they usually try to simplify it even so that people understand this is what's going on. My brother and I, we're tech nerds. We work with computers. We used to play a game where we would use technobabble when we were talking to people about computer stuff and see how long it would be before they realized we were just technobabbling and it wasn't really anything. Usually we lost when we started using the word flux capacitor. That was usually when people started to be like, oh, you're not being serious. And I just kind of felt that same way from Tilly. She started going and I just started zoning out. I'm like, oh, this is just, there is no like good explanation here that John Doe is going to understand. This is like either the bioengineers are getting really angry at what you're saying or nobody understands a word. One of the two.
Yeah, I had to rewind a couple of times just to hear her explain it again so I could figure out what she was saying. And I'm a guy that has heard Geordi LaForge explain things with technobabble for my entire life, and I've been able to figure out what he was saying. And but basically she was trying to say that his brain is connected to all the universes. I mean, that's it in a nutshell.
Yeah, so like it's like he was connected with this. Basically, it's like he uploaded some of his brain to the cloud.
Yeah.
But being disconnected from the spores, he's not online, so he can't access his mind photos.
Right. That's, yeah.
Well, it's the other way around. It's he uploaded his brain to the cloud, and now he's so far away from a router, he's using all of his power to stay connected, because if he loses the connection, he'll die. At least that's what I, that's kind of how I took it.
That's probably right. Like I said, I wasn't following.
But again, that was still some wonderful acting from Mary Wiseman, who just continues to impress.
And I will say for the record, even though we all knew the Valk thing was coming, he acted it better than I thought. Like, he did as good a job as acting that transformation as anyone could.
Yeah.
Like, just little subtle ticks, like, from confusion to calm, to comfort, to, like, very subtle facial stuff going on. Like, it was a really good job.
All right, so Michael Burnham can't sleep. She says the light is different where she is and that kind of thing. Everywhere she turns, there's fear. When she says that, Saru's counterpart comes in, and he is her personal slave. Now, this is the first thing that I had a problem with, because I can get that the Kelpians would be a slave species in this universe, but I can't wrap my head around the fact that that specific slave would be on that specific ship.
Oh, that's mirror universe stuff, though.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
Be careful with that. You'll find all of the flaws, and it's going to come tumbling down.
The defense rests, Your Honor.
Yeah, that's the main problem. And last episode, I liked what they were doing with the mirror universe. And I kind of, the thing about the show is my wife and I both love the show, but we can't watch the show together because I work on Sunday nights. So I'm watching it at work because I've got to watch it for this show, you know. So she starts texting me after the show is over and, you know, asking me to explain things and stuff. She says, why isn't Saru evil? You know, if this is the mirror universe and he's supposed to be the counterpart, then he should be evil. And I told her, I was like, it's kind of like what Discovery is doing with the Klingons. You know, they're reinventing the Klingons. I think they're reinventing the mirror universe. And they're saying that these characters are not necessarily just evil counterparts. They're the same character. It's just that all the circumstances in their life are completely different, so it shapes them differently.
So, well, but he's had a goatee.
Yeah.
This is what really pissed me off about this episode, because everybody is the same except the humans. Because and where I lost it, and is when Burnham starts working on Valk. Now the fact that Valk and Sarek are both down on that fucking planet together. Anyway,
it makes sense that Sarek would be there. Like he's always
it makes sense.
Villages.
All right, I'll give you Sarek. But Valk and Sarek. But why would he be? Valk was a freaking sycophantish follower. Anyway, okay.
Well,
but wait. Before we get to that.
All right.
Okay. regardless of who the Fire Wolf is, he's a Klingon.
Yeah.
And Burnham goes up to him and starts hitting him with Klingon psychology. And it's on the nose. It's exact. It's right. We're in a universe that everybody's supposed to be, that this is how it's been set up, that everybody is kind of the mirror of themselves. So why are the Klingons exactly the same in this universe?
That is a point I hadn't considered. But
I win.
Does anyone else want to answer before I answer?
Well, I'm going to say they obviously weren't the same, because in no situation in the Prime Universe are the Klingons going to actually be the ones who forged that alliance. And so they are very different. What I had an issue with that is, why would Burnham see the Terrans and be like, oh, these people are completely different than humans, and so I'm going to go figure out these Klingons, because these Klingons are going to be the exact same. Why would she think they're the same when they're in a universe where everything is so turned on its head? And so that, well, I mean, we both had issues with that scene, but it was, you were like, oh, it's because it's flipped on its head. I actually liked Vok's response, where he was all like, we've been beaten down, our language has been forgotten, this and that. But, you know, so I think they were describing Klingons before the point in their history where things changed, before the Zephyr and Cochrane and the warp drive thing, where they shot the Vulcans. And so I think the Klingons still would have been the Klingons in that universe up until that point, until they got beaten down to a point where they had to do it. And so she was describing old Klingons, not the modern Klingons.
So I guess that. For me, I guess the fundamental question is this. I never saw the mirror universe. I mean, from the very first TOS episode, you know, they're the opposite, you know, opposite day versions. Which is obviously a little simplistic, but pretty much after that, I took it as, you're these people. Who would you be if all of your circumstances were different? Mm-hmm. So you are the same person, you know, but if I grew up in, you know, Russia instead of America, I'd still be me, but I'd be a different me. That's how I saw the mirror universe. So I guess the question is the mirror universe significantly divergent only from the point of first contact with humans, where he shoots them instead of befriends them, or are we to assume that, you know, like from the Big Bang, everything is different?
The second thing, that's been the conceit all along.
That's crazy.
It all is. Right, that's why I hate Mirror Universe episodes.
I took it from the first. I always thought it was the first. It's like, what if, you know, like those old Marvel comics. What if, you know?
It's like Superman Red Sun. What if he landed in Russia instead of Kansas?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what they said in the Enterprise episode that was a mirror episode. Peter Parker
got exposed to gamma radiation.
They said that it was the Zephyr Cochrane thing. But
They just showed Zephyr Cochrane killing the Vulcans instead of greeting them. Why? There was no point where Zephyr Cochrane went, the spaceship's landing. I could befriend them, or I could kill them. It wasn't it wasn't one of those quantum choice things. Cochrane was evil before they even landed.
That's what I was going to say. There would have to be a point that would show why he would make one decision instead of the other, because he had to be a completely different kind of person.
He wasn't a completely different kind of person. In first contact, he was still that same guy. He was making the warp drive as a means of war. It's just basically he changed his mind. Wasn't. Yeah, he said he was.
He said he was making the warp drive to make money so he could retire to an island with naked women.
Yeah, that's what he said in first contact, yeah.
All right, that makes more sense. No, but I thought, okay. All right, well, let's just agree that his motives were not altruistic.
No, not necessarily. No, I'll grant you that.
All right.
But you see, this is my problem with the Mirror Universe all along. It was great as a standalone TOS episode, part of a what was for all intents and purposes an anthology series with the same characters each time. It was one of those wonderful. It was like one of the short stories from science fiction of the 50s and 60s. Self-contained. Don't analyze it too much. Just dig the metaphor and go with it. But then when DS9 took it and said we're gonna try to flesh out this thing, it started taking the mental contortions you had to make to put all of these people in the same place, yet with different personalities and different circumstances. I can't imagine the Terran Empire ever making starships. Let alone starships that look just like the ones in the Prime universe. Because the Terran Empire would make ships that were, bristling with weapons and, would look more like the ship of the dead than the freaking Enterprise. So this whole thing.
Well, what if they were all based on the Defiant?
That's.
I'm not even.
No, I did think about that today. I can see. I did think about that today.
I tell you, I do love what they're doing with the Defiant, though, because this is where they've made the Trek nerds happy. As Trek nerds, we're like, this is not the Defiant they think it is. They've never said that this is a weird Defiant. The closest they came was maybe there's some kind of weird temporal anomaly, but they're thinking it's their Defiant. And the nerds who watch DS9, we're happy that they're talking about the stuff that we know about. But this is probably the one thing in the episode that I was like, they're talking to me. They've got me.
Well, I know that a lot of the Gatekeeper fans out there were pissed when they saw the wireframe drawing of the Defiant and the nacelles were a little different. And we're like, dudes, they've had the ship for almost a century. You don't think they did something to it?
Yeah, really.
the last scene when the Emperor's ship shows up, basically they said they can't see it. Was their ship cloaked? Was that the only one who?
This series is playing fast and loose with that kind of stuff right now, and I'm not sure where they're going with that.
Yeah.
However,
why can't we see them? Yeah. So why can't we see them? Okay. Is that?
That was the assumption that I made that it had been cloaked.
Except they read their power signature,
yeah,
so maybe
they
were coming in from the
signature.
Other side of the planet.
Right. Right.
Okay, so the Terrans have located the Fire Wolf, which is basically the leader of the rebellion, and they're on a hidden.
Sure, you got that name too, by the
way. Yeah, they're on a hidden base. Michael Burnham has to keep her first officer from immediately destroying them, because her conscience would not allow her to just sit by and let innocent rebels be killed if she can do something about it. She wants to use the opportunity to get the Defiant data off the ship. And since Firewolf is said to be Klingon, she thinks that finding out how he was able to see eye to eye with other races will kind of help them in the war when they go back to the Prime Universe. So the Firewolf is the mirror version of Vok. And she tells him that they need to leave. And in order to believe her, he has the mirror universe version of Sarek come and do a, and he calls him the Prophet, and has him come and do a mind meld with her. And Sarek doesn't quite understand what he sees. And I didn't understand why he didn't decode what he was seeing, because I thought that's what a mind meld was supposed to do. He was supposed to be able to read her thoughts, so he would know, hey, she's from another universe.
Yeah, I put in my notes, Sarek really buried the lead on that mind meld.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, yeah, you can trust her. Oh, by the way, here's her entire history.
Yeah.
And see, I was about to say...
there's a piece of me in her somehow.
I was about to say that maybe there was some incompatibility because of different universes, but Spock mind melded with McCoy, no problem. And instantly knew everything that was going on with in the TOS episode. So that, I don't know.
Maybe Sarek is just keeping it, close to the chest. He's not. Maybe he does know. He's just not saying it.
See, that's how I read it. Like, he wants to understand more before he says something.
Yeah.
Or for whatever reason, he felt like that information might freak Vok out or something. Like he's. Kind of basically telling him what he needed to know.
Another opinion that I played with was that he was protecting Michael. He did the mind meld and he realized, oh, I'm basically her father in this other universe. And she didn't come in and say, I'm from another universe. She said, I'm a different person. Right. And she's right. hiding that. And so she's hiding it for a reason. I'm not going to blow her cover yet.
Yeah.
That works. That works.
Yeah, he seemed to be as much, if not more, fatherly to her than the Prime Sarek.
Well, remember, complete opposites in the Mirror Universe.
Right. So, he's a great like dad said, in the Mirror Universe.
Well, not a dick.
Yeah. I mean, we're just lucky he's not wearing leather and wanting to fuck himself. So. And you can bleep that if you want. I know.
I'm sorry, what?
Go ahead.
Have you seen DS9, John?
Yeah. Oh. Got it. All
right. Well, the one thing that bothered me in the DS9 Mirror Universe episodes was the fact that Sisko slept with the Mirror Universe version of Dax.
Sure did.
Which
I watched that today.
If she found out about that, she might be kind of weirded out.
Yeah, don't get me started on the DS9 Mirror Universe stuff, because I just can't even.
There, I don't know if you guys have ever read the book Red Shirts by John Scalzi.
I loved it.
Yeah.
There's a scene in there that makes fun of the Mirror Universe having a relationship with yourself. And I'll leave it there, but. It's pretty funny. That's not unique to this podcast, being weirded out by that.
I'll tell you, folks, just as an aside, if you haven't read Red Shirts, and you're a Star Trek fan, you owe it to yourselves to read it. But just a warning, it is not the zany romp you might think it's going to be.
Sometimes.
Well, but it was a lot more serious than I expected it to be, and I appreciated that. I'm not faulting it for that. It just I was expecting some silliness, and while there certainly was some, it was also, you know, he played it straight, which is love comedy like that.
Definitely.
I do have to say one thing good about the whole what was the name of the planet? Helmax or
I don't remember. Yeah,
Halleck, something like that. It was
Halleck, I think.
Gurney? No, it couldn't have been Halleck. I'd have been making Gurney Halleck jokes all along. Anyway, I love what they did with the Tellarites.
Yeah, I was going to say the all you're talking about, like the visually the way that they changed.
Yeah, because the Tellarites have always been very problematic from a makeup standpoint.
Yeah.
In TOS, it was basically just a pig mask, and they didn't even bother to make the eyes. Like, I don't want to say bother. They didn't have the budget to do much more, but, you know, their eyes were never, you couldn't even see their eyes in the masks. Mm-hmm. And then in Enterprise, they improved on the makeup, but it was still basically just a dude with a pig snout. And granted, none of them had any lines, so I don't know how articulated the prosthetics were, probably not at all, but I like the tusks and the much more natural looking faces that the Tellarites had in this episode.
Yeah, I like the Andorians were kind of redesigned a little bit too, and
had some extra pointy bits. Yeah.
I like the way they look too. Okay, so Ash tries to attack Vok. Actually, Ash does attack Vok, and Vok almost kills him until
It was Vok, Ash, not Ash.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Okay. Get taken.
I mean, splitting hairs here.
It's relevant.
Shazad Latif.
Yeah.
Attacks a stuntman in a Vok costume.
Right.
It was the Vok personality that attacked the Fire Wolf, not the Tyler personality.
Yeah, he was still kind of he wasn't 100% yet. He didn't become 100% until he started having that conversation with Michael in the next scene.
Yeah, but he took a big jump because he's literally had to face himself spewing all this, you know, all the races can get along thing, which is like antithetical.
All right. Here's something I wanted to mention this earlier. Isn't Burnham being incredibly naive? Because I think the reason all of these races it's exactly what he told her. We have a common enemy, so we're working together.
Yeah.
I don't know why there was a big mystery to that. It seemed pretty obvious.
Yeah. I think it's wishful thinking on her part. She wants there to be some secret that she can unlock so that she can unlock the achievement when she gets back to the Prime Universe. You know?
These people are trying to kill all of us, so we're like, stop it. The end.
Okay, so back with what's going on the Discovery with Tilly and Stamets. So we found out that his brain is actually connected to other universes. So she's going to try and fix it with spores. And he starts crashing. So Saru orders a medical team to save him. And when they do that, it disengages him from the network. And so it kind of looks like he's going to be catatonic forever. That's what she's afraid of.
He was dead.
Yeah, well, yeah, and then a few minutes later, he seems to kind of wake up, and he's inside of a dream. It looks like a dreamlike world where he's surrounded by spores and all that, and the mirror universe version of Stamets comes walking up to him and says, ask him if he's ready to get to work. So that tells me that universe's version of Stamets not only was doing the same work, but must have been better at it, because... because he had been, like, waiting for him or whatever. And now I guess we're getting the answer as to whether or not that was Mirror Stamets that we saw in the mirror a few episodes back. Because I kind of got that he had been with him for a while, and he was waiting for him to kind of wake up to it.
See, I think he was waiting because Prime Stamets had been kind of unconsciously, subconsciously tapping into the grand multi-universe deal. Like, you know, when he came out, he was like, you know, Captain Tilly before he saw Captain Tilly. I think Mirror Stamets was greeting him because this is the first time he was consciously aware of being in this Nexus Spore Hub deal.
Yeah.
See, and I feel like the Mirror Stamets would be further advanced than our Stamets because they're not going to have any qualms about the genetic modification and, oh, is this too hard on him? The captain there on that ship is going to say, okay, you're going to make these jumps, and we're going to make these jumps now, and you're going to listen to me, and I don't care if it kills you because this is what I want.
Right.
And so he would have been more to the state where Stamets currently is beforehand. And so I feel like he was just kind of sitting there waiting for it. And he's like, okay, I went through my catatonic state a couple weeks ago. Catch up with me, please.
Yeah. It's like, who knows how many tardigrades or little tardigrade cubes are floating around in the mirror universe that got used up.
Well, and I also, I thought that it was maybe this in mirror universe. They're like, you want to use what? Get the fuck out of here. So the military never co-opted them. So they were just kind of left free to do their research on their own without, like, getting sucked into the war. So it progressed faster.
Yeah, but now the mirror version of the Discovery has been transported to the Prime Universe, but Mirror Stamets is right here where Stamets is. So I'm wondering if they're still connected through the rift or whatever,
through that mycelial network.
Yeah,
because the way that they did that, they flew into the little 3D animation of the neurons in his head or whatever technobabble it was, and that's kind of what that landscape looked like. Was it's just inside of his head, and we've already established with, like, the Harry Mudd episode with the time travel and with the hey Captain Tilly, all those things, the inside of his head is connected to everything.
Yeah.
So they can communicate and still be in different universes.
So I think that a lot of the stuff with chasing the data for the Defiant and all that is basically a red herring. Their answer to get back to the Prime Universe is right here, where these two versions of Stamets are still connected through the two different versions of the Discovery.
Yeah, I think if Stamets were to regain consciousness, then they could jump back. But he's basically offline. So that's why they're trying to find the alternate route.
Right.
No, I stand by what I said last week. Like you said, the Defiant is a red herring. Lorca wants the Defiant. to continue his quest to defeat the Emperor. I still think this is Mirror Lorca. That hasn't changed me at all.
He's definitely Mirror Lorca, and there were things in this episode that pointed to that.
Yeah.
The monologue with Michael at the beginning, where she was talking about how everything's different. She said something to the effect of, even the light is different. It's not as brilliant. And then all of a sudden I was all like, oh. And so we have a Lorca who can't handle bright light because where he's from, naturally, it's not as brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even think about that. Yeah,
I felt like that was pointing right to that. And this is something years ago. I read an interview with Dick Wolf, who was one of the creators or was the creator of Law and Order. Yeah. And somebody asked him, how can you be so successful in your shows? Because just season after season after season. And the underlying subtext was, and the shows aren't that great. And his response was, you know, there's a secret to this. You have to do what he called, I think it was dishwashing episodes, where you can have the TV on and be doing the dishes and still follow the thread. And so you have to have enough in there for somebody who's doing something distracted to still follow along in the story. And this is where I felt like this was very much not geared towards Trek nerds, because this is the one show in the entire week that I sit down and I turn off everything and I watch it full screen on my computer. I've got a 32-inch screen on my computer. It gets my undivided attention. Everything else, I'm doing something else while I'm enjoying that content. There's nothing else that I've got right now that has my full attention. And so for us, who we watch this and it has our attention, we're seeing all these things and it's like, oh, this is so painfully obvious. But to somebody else who's got it in a window in their computer while they're at work, it may not be as obvious. And so I feel like this is why it's not making as many Trek fans, old time Trek fans, happy, because they're thinking about it too much. And then it telegraphs everything clear through the season.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like, you know, to back up your point there, and I hadn't really, and I hadn't thought of it that way. Last week, after last week's episode, on another group that I'm on, and I'm not going to name names because I don't want to shame anyone, but in the discussion of last week's episode on that Facebook group, one person was like, "So, wow, is it me or do you think Ash is a Klingon?" And I'm like, I think they pretty clearly spelled that out, that he's Vok at this point.
Yeah. Let's see. Okay, so Michael confronts Ash about what's happening to him when they get back to the ship. And he says that, first he just says that he feels something for Laurel and he feels like he has to do whatever she says. And Michael tells him that it's brainwashing, you know, and he's having these flashes of memories that really went in overdrive when he saw Vok face to face. And then he remembers that he killed Culber. Like we asked last week if he remembers doing that. He didn't remember doing that until now. When he does remember that, I think that's pretty much the tipping point. He goes 100% Vok at that point. Vok just wakes up, I guess, inside of him. So he realizes who he is, and he tells her who he is. And she doesn't believe him at first, you know. And then he tells her, you know, well, I killed Dr. Culber. And when she says she wants to try and contact Saru or whatever, he attacks her. They start to fight, and Slave Saru comes in and saves the day. So he's not as cowardly as he appeared to
well,
be.
Well, also, she was nice to him for what is probably the first time in his life. And she, because when she first sees him, of course, there's that, oh my God, Saru, what are you doing here? And he's, you know, he said, I'm here to bathe you. And she, now this is, of course, after she has just witnessed the spacing of three people and done nothing about it. Not that she could.
And the crime was that they had malicious thoughts about the captain, which makes me wonder, do they have some kind of technology to police your thoughts? Because if they do, that could spell trouble for her.
I didn't get that impression. I thought it was just more of a 1984 thought police kind of thing. They said the wrong thing at the wrong time.
Yeah. They were heard whispering by the water cooler.
Okay. Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah. But so Saru comes in and says, what's your name? And he says, a slave has no name. And then he bathes her. And according to After Trek, the producer that they had on, they said that scene was hilarious because Doug Jones has these big rubber gloves on his hands. And he said, trying to do the massaging, they just kept breaking up laughing because it was just so hard to do with the gloves. But then later on, he brings her food and she says, I'm going to call you. She goes, thanks, Saru. And he's like, "Arr?"
Yeah.
And I'm going to call you Saru. I'm going to give you a name
now.
So
I'm going to call you Mickey. No.
I had a thought about this though, because you know, back in the slave times in the United States, they talked a lot about how the masters wouldn't let them have names in certain circumstances, but the slaves always had their own names and things like that. Do you think, so this is Mirror Universe, do you think he's still named Saru? And so when she's all like, I'm going to call you Saru, because that's, and he's thinking, that's what the other slaves call me while nobody's paying attention. Wow. Do you think that may have been why he was all like, there's something up with you. You were nice to me, and then you knew my name, so I'm going to help protect you.
Maybe he has niceness ganglia.
Yeah, unless he was bravery, unless ganglia. He was placed into slavery at birth or whatever, I would assume that he would have the same name. Everybody else has the same names that they have in the Prime Universe. So
now his name is Smiley in this.
I'm sure that he was placed into slavery at birth.
Yeah.
But I think I find your theory highly intriguing. But I think if she did call him by a name, that there's no way she could know. I think he would have inquired more about it.
Just it was more like giving Dobby a sock.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So so when Saru stops the attack, security comes and takes Ash, hauls him off to the transporter room. They're going to beam him out into space. They put him on the transporter pad. This is another disconnect that I had with the show.
Well, wait. I think I know where you're going because I was bitching about it last night. Since I rewatched the show today, there is a scene between the two events.
Yep.
Where she could have contacted the Discovery. There's a
cut. Because like when I watched it the first time, I'm like, when the hell did she have time? But there is, after they haul Tyler away, they cut back to the Discovery, and that's when Stamets kind of sort of wakes up.
Yeah.
And then we see the two Stamets's in the mycelium network, and then we go back to the Shenzhou.
Yeah. That wasn't the disconnect I was talking about.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. That needed an explanation too. But, okay, so as far as Ash knows, he's about to be killed. They put him on the transporter pad. He's about to be beamed out into space. Why does he not then start screaming, she's not who she says she is. She's from a mirror universe, blah, 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 blah. He just
he's a Klingon. He's dying with honor.
I guess.
I thought of that. I was like, why isn't he outing her? But yeah, Brandon just said he's trying to die with honor. And also, he probably realizes at that point no one's going to believe a word he says.
Well, yeah. But that wouldn't stop me. I would still do it. But yeah, and my wife asked me the same thing last night, and the only thing that I could come up with is that there's still part of Tyler that's fighting to come back out. And that part of Tyler is protecting her. But yeah. that's the only thing I come... Because I still think, after all this stuff with Vok and all of it takes place, I think that Tyler, by the end of this season, Tyler is going to be the personality in this body. And Vok is going to either be part of his personality, but like a backseat driver or whatever, or he's going to just be completely gone, and Ash will be Ash, and he'll continue to be a character on this show in the future. I don't think Ash is going to get killed in this season.
I disagree.
I don't know what
we're not seeing Ash in next season. He's going out with a big redemption sacrifice.
Maybe. We'll see. Okay, so another...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
One other complaint I have, and maybe this is just one of those things where everyone, quote-unquote, expects it, and so they're doing it. I was just very disappointed to see Star Trek doing the instant freezing once you get into space thing.
Yeah.
Because that's not in any way true. It's bullshit, quote-unquote, science that's... Everyone knows it happens, but it doesn't, and I was just very disappointed to see them do that.
Shame on you, Star Trek.
But, well, they were just saying, we'll see you on Leia and raise you a Vok.
Right.
Star Wars wants to do that stuff, I don't care, because it's Star Wars. They have slugs living in asteroids eating starships.
Yeah. Yeah, this is supposed to be science fiction, right. So she takes the control and she beams him out into space, but she knows that Discovery is monitoring them and they're going to pick him up. And she planted the Defiant data on him so that they can get it. So she found her way to get the data to them. When he's taken aboard the Discovery, Saru has him taken to the brig, .. where Laurel is.
Where Laurel is, yeah.
Like, yeah. Put him in, just take Brer Rabbit and put him in the briar patch. I mean. But yeah, I mean, so now Vok and Laurel are going to be together. I mean, they may not be in the same cell, but they'll be able to speak to each other and they'll be able to formulate a plan of some sort.
It seems amazingly foolhardy, unless it's to get them talking where they can monitor what they're up to.
Yeah.
At the same time, it's the Discovery is a science vessel, so you can't imagine they're going to have too many brigs.
Yeah.
No.
There are only so many options.
Rooms.
I mean, he just said...
They could just lock them in any old room. Yeah. It's fine.
He said take him to the brig. He didn't say take him to brig 3 or something like that. You know? So, okay. So another vessel discovers the Rebel base and shows up. They see an energy signature. They don't actually see a ship, but there is a ship there, and it destroys the base, presumably before the Rebels can get away, but we didn't see the Rebels, so we don't know if they're gone or not.
Sure, some of them got away.
Yeah, and Michael is told that there's an incoming transmission from the Emperor, and a hologram of Georgiou appears and on the bridge and chastises her for not completing her mission. So, yeah, Philippa Georgiou is the Empress. Thoughts?
Is that a French name?
It's her married name. According to, if you've read the book Desperate Hours, I don't know if it's not so much considered canon, but it was written using the show Bible, and the author, I forget his name, David Mack, thank you, was working with the producers of the show. So it's fairly reasonable to assume that what's in that book is canon. And Georgiou is her married name. She's divorced or widowed. I forget. I think divorced. So whatever her actual maiden name is, I don't think they mention it, but Georgiou is not her maiden name.
Yeah, and they don't call her anything here, but Emperor.
Emperor.
Or Empress.
Yeah. They say Emperor.
Yeah, it should be Empress, shouldn't it?
It's up to her.
I guess. Yeah, that's true.
She's the Emperor.
She calls herself Emperor, so, yeah. I'm not going to the agony booth for arguing over
that. So, but what we see in the scene that we got on After Trek obviously shows that Michael and Lorca get away. I don't know if they escape or if they're sent away on some mission or something like that. But
don't they say they've been summoned to the Royal Palace?
Well, he does say that that's where they're going. But we kind of speculated a while back that he was eventually going to want to go to the palace and take down the Emperor. So I don't know if it's part of that or if it's because that's where they're supposed to be going because somebody told them to. I don't know. I guess we'll find out. But anyway... So Georgiou is the Emperor, and that's basically all we know about that, is that she is the Emperor. and she appears to be a very angry one.
So, I have a question.
Go ahead.
It seems they built up the mystery. No one knows what the Emperor looks like, but everyone recognized the Emperor. So everyone knows what the Emperor looks like, but it's not on any records.
I didn't get that everybody recognized her. I got that they said that you're getting a transmission from the Emperor and Michael recognized her.
Well, no, they did the Emperor salute. Like, there's a different salute for the Emperor.
Well, yeah, because they said we're getting a transmission from the Emperor. And for the other people on the bridge, this may be the first time that they've ever seen her. Because she's always been called the Faceless Emperor. You know.
Well, no, that this is the fact that the data core they had was from the rebels, and they may not know what the Emperor looks like, but the Emperor's minions certainly know. It just may not be a matter of the records that the rebels could get their hands on. And now I'll grant you, the records they got their hands on are remarkably complete in some areas and remarkably incomplete in others.
Yeah.
But you know,
convenient areas,
right? Exactly.
Highly suspect. All right.
Again, mirror universe fuckery. It's why I don't like this.
See, the thing that I disliked the most about the Emperor is Georgiou had a great ending scene. She had a great impact on Burnham, and now we're like, okay, you know that character that you loved. Here, she's the bad guy now. And without anything to deserve that, other than we jumped universes. Yeah. And so I'm glad to see Michelle Yeoh in there because she's a great actress. But I feel like they did the Georgiou character a disservice.
Well, I think in general, and I, you know, I'm not the originator of this idea by any stretch, but just in general, going to the mirror universe in your first season is it's like when TNG did The Naked Now as their second episode. You know, if you don't really know the characters, showing them being different doesn't have as much impact as if it was like 3 years down the line and suddenly we're thrown into the mirror universe and there's Empress Georgiou. It's like, holy shit.
Yeah.
But here it was just like, oh yeah, kind of figured you were going that way.
Yeah. I think they kind of get away with it just a little bit more because I think, like I said before, these characters are more developed in these 11 episodes than what we usually get in 11 episodes of Star Trek. They've spent a lot more time on these characters. And so seeing their mirror counterparts was a little bit more effective than it would have been if they had done this in the first season of TNG or something like that. But I see what you're saying. But yeah, there's... And we got a complaint on the Facebook group about speculation, which I don't really see any way to get around it when you're doing a show like this of speculation, because if you're watching a show and you're listening to a podcast about the show and we speculate about a lot of stuff and we're right about most of it, then it takes a little bit of the pleasure away of seeing those things unfold. So, but like I said, I don't see any way to get around it because that's a speculation is a lot of what you do when you're doing a episode by episode podcast like this. But you know,
I'm going to say that it really depends, because in that same interview with Dick Wolf, he also talked about how part of the reason why people like to watch Law and Order is because they figure out who the bad guy is and who's guilty before you figure out who's guilty. And then that way, the viewer feels like they are in on a secret and that they know better and that they feel smart. Mm-hmm. And so they enjoy it when it comes to that resolution. And that's because that was another thing he said. He's like, you don't want to make these things too complicated because you want people to be able to figure it out before you say this is how it worked. Like, I mean, if you go see Ocean's 11, yeah, you like the fact that you were hoodwinked.
Yeah.
But when you're watching a mystery kind of a thing, you want to have the chance to figure it out yourself and to either be completely shocked or to be like, yep, I knew it all along. I am so smart. And so, I mean, that's what this show is letting us do. all the way from the, you know, all the telegraphing, all the fact that Lorca is like, okay, we got the Defiant there. You know what? Let's hang out on the ship a little longer because we want to hang out here. And, you know, for some reason, just in case, actually, I'm trying to get to the Emperor so that I can go take my rightful place as the ruler of this universe.
Yeah. Okay.
I like that. That's a direction I never would have considered. Thank you. That helps a lot.
That he just wants to rule everything?
Well, no, just the fact that I've been kind of defending the writers a little bit in other areas, because being a writer for a television series these days has got to be, a Sisyphean task. Because you're pitting your brain and maybe, you know, let's be generous and say a dozen other people against millions of nerds sitting there like brainstorming and trying to figure out everything that you could do, will do, might have done, should do, or won't do. You know, it's an impossible task. And, you know, here I am giving them shit for not defeating me in that area. Only because they've been doing it all along. And let me just reiterate that. I'm not pissed that I figured this out. I'm pissed that up until now I couldn't, and now all of a sudden I'm, you know, getting everything. But what you just said makes perfect sense. You want, you know, they could probably easily make it so intricate and complicated that there's no way you'd know what was happening until the end, and you'd lose half your audience.
Yeah.
But make it just hard enough that people feel like they've accomplished something by figuring it out ahead of time, and you keep them coming back for more. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
It's like the drug dealer mentality.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's all I've got to say about the episode. I did have a voicemail that I wanted to play, and let me pull it up and I will play that. And unfortunately, the person that left this voicemail did not leave their name. So if you're the person that left this voicemail, send me a message and let me know so that I can put your name in for the contest. But I'm going to go ahead and play this. And
hey, guys, I just wanted to call and say it is a great show, and I was wondering if I could bring up this topic to you guys. Since the cat's out of the bag that Ash is Valk, and that scene we saw with the latex Klingon boobs, is that really a rape scene or is that just a love scene? Love to hear your thoughts on it. Keep up the great work. Thanks, guys. Talk to you later. Bye.
His name is Matt Anderson.
Okay.
And he's been a listener of Simply Syndicated for a long time. And he and I had this discussion yesterday. And he asked where to send that.
You wrote me about it. I didn't know if that was the same person or not. So, okay, Matt. So,
well, I'd be very surprised if it isn't. Let's say I've never heard Matt's voice, but I'm assuming that's it would be an incredible coincidence if that's not him.
Okay. So what he was asking is, the scene where we keep flashing back to where Laurel and Ashvok are having sex, is that still, or do we still see that as being a rape scene, or is that a love scene? I'm still not sure myself, because in my mind, if she was doing that, and she kind of said this a little bit on After Trek last night, if she was doing that after the process of placing Ash's memories on top of Vox, and Ash doesn't know her, then he's going to be seeing it as rape, even though she sees it as making love. So it all really depends on where in the process they were when that happened.
Well, and even when that memory comes into play, because maybe it was a latent memory that snuck through because it was so powerful or something like that. And well, maybe it was from before the entire procedure. And yes, we see Ash, but that's, if it was from his mind, that was something that was how he pictured himself. I shock myself like every day when I look in the mirror. I'm like, I'm not this person. Oh yeah, I've just aged a little bit. Yeah. And so if Ash sees himself as the human Ash, and he's like, oh, in this memory, this is me, then that, I mean, we have a completely unreliable narrator with everything with Ash and Valk right now.
I will, Christopher DeFilippis totally called that, like, on episode 9 or whatever, when we first saw that scene. He predicted that it was exactly what it was, that he saw himself as Ash, but in fact he was Valk, and that's only because he thought he was Ash that he remembered himself being Ash. So, you know, prop to you, Mr. Flip.
Yeah.
As far as whether or not it was, let's say, consensual, I'm inclined to think he only ever remembers that as part of a flashback of him, like all of the gruesome stuff. So for whatever reason, he is associating those sexual encounters with the torturous part. So he doesn't flash back to, you know, the tender moments by the reactor core, or like, you know, holding hands, or what, you know, like
are Klingons, right? They don't do tender.
But there's nothing. Like he doesn't see a conversation. He doesn't see, like, you know, the lustful growl. He doesn't see her eyes. You know, at least from the scenes that we have seen, assuming that that's what he has when he has these flashes, it's blood, torture, skinning, sex with Laurel. Like, there's for whatever reason, his mind puts that in the same category of these awful events.
Sounds like Klingon mating to me. I mean, yeah. That's...
The Klingons don't have anesthetic. What the hell? He was completely rebuilt and awake the whole time. That's the only...
Well, I think...
You know, maybe they think anesthetic is for the weak or something, but jeez.
Well, I mean, given what was done to him, there's no anesthetic that would keep you asleep while your, like, every organ is being changed and your bones are being shrunk or whatever.
Yeah, I think...
He was probably out for a while.
I think that, I think that a lot of the answer... Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think that the answer to that question is going to be fleshed out a little bit more, a little bit more next week when we actually see Ash and Laurel in the brig together and they're able to have a conversation after the Valk memories have surfaced more. So we may get a little bit more insight into whether or not that sexual encounter was welcome. So
yeah, I kind of think that Matt's right though. I guess he didn't really put forth a. When we were talking, he was indicating to me that it seems that it's now less a rape and more consensual, and I kind of tend to agree with that.
Well, I think it's definitely more in question.
Like, yeah, it's certainly not as clearly a sexual assault as it was before, which hopefully, I know that there are some people out there, some, you know, one person who is very dear to me is very troubled by that whole aspect of it being a sexual assault. And I hope that this for people out there who are triggered by the depiction of what apparently was a sexual assault. Hopefully this will take some of the curse off of it for them. You know, I didn't have a problem. You know, there were some people who wished it wasn't there, wished they hadn't done that or wished they had handled differently. The fact that we see Laurel quote unquote naked, even though she's wearing more prosthetics than ever in the scene. They thought it was unnecessary. And I disagreed. You know, I've said this on the show. I think it was, we needed that point driven home. There could not be any ambiguity at that point about what was happening. And the only way for it to be it also had to be very clear that Laurel was in charge, was dominating the situation. And I can't think of another way to do that wouldn't have involved, for all intents and purposes, nudity. It's, you know, so I hope it wasn't just the nudity that was the problem for people. I think it was the implication that it was an assault, that it was non-consensual, that it was a rape. So hopefully this situation now, granted, is fucked up beyond belief. Yeah. This is not normal in any sense. Hopefully this will you know, take some of the sting out of it for people who might have been triggered by those flashbacks in a very bad way.
Well, the lady that plays Laurel, like I said, she was on After Trek, and she kind of spoke about it for a second, but she didn't go one way or the other. But it kind of insinuated that it all depends on which part of Vok's mind was in charge at that time, if it was before or after the right. procedure was completed, because, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. So. Well, again, that's go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, this seems a lot like Rashomon to me, which is the Kurosawa film from the 50s, mm-hmm. which it's all about perspective and memory. And you can kind of and if you play with that, you can see the same scene from multiple different angles and from different memories. And in Rashomon, it never flat out says this is the objective truth. It says from this perspective, this happened. But from this perspective, this other thing happened. And so from Ash Tyler's perspective, of course, it's going to be a horrible, non-consensual thing. But from Vok's perspective, it's going to be how Klingons show their affection towards each other. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. I agree with you that I hope that this takes the sting out of it. But part of me wants to see this not be resolved, where they don't tell us what actually happened and where that actually took place. Because I want this to be something that Trek nerds can argue for years to come. Was this... Who was he at this time? When did Laurel take control, and who is Laurel, and what is she like?
Yeah,
I like that ambiguity and that depth. However, it's Star Trek, so I really feel like they will probably clarify it, and it will probably show that that was Vok, but from Tyler's perspective, that was terrible.
Yeah.
Well, just remember when Tyler confronted her before they left the Discovery, and she told him to lower the force field, and he did. And he's like, "What did you do to me?" And she's literally, I mean, I think for the only time we've ever seen Laurel be truthful, she was puzzled and said, "We did it together." I think as far as she's concerned, it was all consensual.
Yeah. She did not expect the Ash Tyler persona to take hold as deeply and as completely as it did.
Yeah, I completely saw that, and I blame Burnham for it. She was his tether.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a question. Where did the Ash Tyler personality come from? Was he engrammed from some other actual person, or did they create him?
No, he was an actual person. He was a prisoner on that ship, and the original Ash, I guess, is dead now. Because I don't see how he could have survived them sucking his memories and everything out of his mind and putting them in Vok. But I think that Tyler's ingrained memories and everything that's in this body, I think that's essentially him. I mean, he's not a false memory. It's an actual person. That's why I was kind of going back and forth with, is he going to be able to survive this? Because I see that as maybe his physical body is dead now that he's had to go through this procedure and everything, but mentally, his soul, if you will, is still there. He's still alive. He's just in Vok's body.
And that's a very Star Trek thing to do.
Yeah.
Like, what is a life? Who is, what is the life worth, and who should be in charge, and is he really dead? I mean, it's almost to data levels of what is humanity.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, because they showed the operating table where they were taking organs out of Ash and putting them into Vok. Mm-hmm. And this it was in one of those flashback scenes in this episode. And it was really gruesome. And at first I thought, this is just CBS saying, hey, we're not on broadcast TV anymore. We can show stuff like this. But after having this discussion, I think that was actually a very important thing, because he was actually Ash Tyler. They checked him out. They took his organs because he actually had to pass medical tests.
Right.
And they put it on there. And yeah, they took his memories and his mind. And if they take his memories and they put him onto here, is he actually, if they took just the memories, is that actually humanity? Like, is he actually a person, or is he just like a shadow of the person? And I think that's, I think that's a theme that they're going to explore in future episodes.
Yeah.
So to connect that with another storyline, if we know from After Trek, and I kind of wish we didn't, but we do, that Culber is not completely gone for in whatever way that might manifest. My personal theory is that, you know, the soul, quote unquote soul, it can be accessed through the mycelial network. And if that's the case, can Stamets bring Tyler back, overwrite Vok, pull him out? I don't know.
This...
Well, if anyone can do it, it would be Stamets, yeah, because he is their plot convenient person right now. But he can do anything.
Yeah, that's my theory going forward. I don't know if I'll be proven wrong or not, but my theory going forward is that Tyler's going to win this battle, and he's going to be at home in this new body, and he's going to be the security chief of the Discovery in season two. So,
but how could they? I don't know. I'm going to go on the record as saying that you're wrong.
even if
Tyler gains control and is totally running the ship, I mean not the ship, the ship of his body ship, the USS Tyler Ash, whatever.
I want to start calling him Vash, just to piss people off.
I want a t-shirt that says, I'm going to fix it with spores. But even if Tyler takes control, how can anyone on that ship trust him again? Like, how can he get his position back?
Well, that's when they're going to go. That's what my theory of season two is going to have a lot to do with that. And it's going to be a lot of the Seven of Nine kind of stuff. How were people able to trust her? She was a Borg, you know, and they,
yeah, she didn't kill anybody on Voyager.
Yeah, I know. Well, yeah, they're reinventing it. So, I'm not saying, I will gladly say it, when it comes across that I'm wrong, I'll gladly say, hey, I was wrong about it. It's just, you know, it's a feeling that I have. So
what, go for it.
Okay, the only problem I have, well, not the only problem I have with this episode, but the scene with Stamets meeting Stamets was really cool. But it planted a seed of fear in me, in that I now see the reset button that we always get when Star Trek does this kind of shit. Because they have all, if one more irreparable, horrible thing happens to a main character, then I know they're going to be hitting that reset button at the end of the season, and we're going to go back to, hey, didn't we just leave? No, we're back. None of that happened. Yay, we're all good.
I didn't get that at all.
There's nothing I can specifically point to.
I mean, now that you say it, I can see it.
Yeah, it's more a feeling I'm getting. And I hope I'm wrong. I really
hope. After this episode, I kind of tend to agree with you, because if this had happened, if you had said this last episode, I would have been like, no, you're crazy, because that's what they do. They take this and they flip it on its head and they say, we are not your grandparent Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or your parent Star Trek. But, you know, when they killed the chief security officer right off the bat, and we were like, oh, wow, people die here. Like, significant people die here. But then, you know, Giorgio's dead. She's a big actress. Oh, Giorgio's back. And so, how are they could very easily reset everything, and I hope they don't, but this episode, they took everything that we thought they had reset and they flipped it again, and yeah, they said, oh no, just kidding, this is exactly what you guys thought it was. So I'm looking at the episode titles for the upcoming episodes, and at the risk of being that guy who feels like he's got everything planned out, so we've got an episode called Vaulting Ambition. I think this is going to be Lorca's episode. Lorca trying to take on the Emperor. What's past is prologue. This points very much, I feel like, to what Sean has been saying with, this is going to be Ash coming back. And then you got the War Within, the War Without, the War Within. That seems like it could be a very much Ash-centric episode, maybe a Stamets episode. And then Will You Take My Hand? And this is Ash saying, please trust me again. You need to trust me. I don't know. I feel like they're telegraphing this for us.
Yeah, when you one thing jumped out when you said that one of the episodes had the word past in it. Whenever I see past or future or anything like that in a Star Trek title, I think time travel. So I'm thinking there's going to be some kind of time travel happening in that episode.
Some kind of reset, maybe.
I hope not, but it could be. But I think they would do it. Like, they wouldn't do it until like the last episode or something like that. But
well, there's also the problem of if they do, and if we're wrong, and they do take the Discovery through the interface, the spatial interface that brought the Defiant there. Granted, there's no necessarily reason to expect it to be symmetrical in both directions, but it should spit them out in the TOS time frame, which would lead to needing a whole lot more explanations as to why nobody's heard of the Discovery or the Spore Drive in the Star Trek we know.
Yeah, that's why I think that... Personally, I think that the whole Defiant thing is a red herring, and yeah. the way that they're going to get back, if they go back, which, you know, I'm assuming they will, but they might not. The way that they're going to go back is going to be with Stamets and Stamets, attorneys at law. Okay. Well, does anybody have anything else they want to add before we close out?
I'm spent.
Okay.
Let me look at my notes. Why can't we see them? Fantastic performances. Just a moment. I'm gonna bitch about After Check for just like really fast.
Oh yes, yes, I do have some.
So, so the big reveal: Valk is finally Ash. Ash finally Valk, and he's like, "Yeah." So we had some people with theories online. And he read 3 fan theories that were all off, and not any of the thousands of people who were like, we think Ash is Valk, and like nailed it. Why even bother? Why even say it?
Well, that whole aspect of After Trek, I'm glad they got rid of the real-time reading tweets and shit, because, you know, it was so clear that they only read stuff that, you know, it felt like the, you know, like a 1984-ish kind of, the people have a voice. Here is someone saying, I love our government. Aren't they wonderful?
Yeah.
Why, thank you.
Right. Yeah, I mean, After Trek, like I said, I only watch it to hear the producers and the writers and to get some of the trivia that they do between segments where they kind of show you, oh, yeah, this planet was mentioned in this Deep Space Nine episode, blah, 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 blah. Like, oh, okay, you know, that kind of stuff is kind of cool to me, but
I think I might stop watching it. Like, well, really, the main reason I watch it is because I like, you know, Talking Dead, and for this show. But it does kind of spoil some stuff that I didn't need to see, and he is a little annoying.
I know. Did he do a line of coke before the show started last night or something?
Well, he's just always like that. He's very excited about Star Trek.
Well, no, but no. I mean, normally he's, you know, yes, he's certainly effervescent and and, you know, overexcited. And I've gotten used to that. But like I forget the name of the producer that they had on last night. But at one point, he was like, dude, are you trying to get me fired? I can't answer these questions you're asking me.
Well, I mean, that was bad.
You know, because he's like, so, basically, tell us what happens in the next episode. You
know? No, I'm not going to do that.
And it was just like, you know, he does occasionally kind of try to tease out a little bit of something. But last night, he was just like point blank going, so is this going to happen next time? And the producer, granted, he tried to laugh it off and keep it light, but he did say, you're trying to get me fired, aren't you?
I took that as a joke. I thought he was. Yeah.
But the thing is, he made it a joke, but the questions Mira was asking were not in any way appropriate for that show. Because he was literally asking for plot points of upcoming episodes. And it just seemed like very out of character for him to be that blunt. So you know, I don't know where that was coming from, but
well, it's almost like he's trying to make his show be, I don't know, like top of the heap or whatever. But the thing is, his show is the only show. I mean, he doesn't have anybody to compete with. CBS is not letting,
well, except for you guys.
Well, yeah, but I mean, CBS is not letting.
Days later.
CBS is not letting these people talk to anybody else. I mean, the After Trek is the only talk show that they're appearing on where they can talk at length about anything. You know, I mean, if you see them on Good Morning America or something like that, they're not going to give you any information. The only thing like that you're going to get is on After Trek. So he doesn't have to try that hard. He's got the only, you know, he's got the only dog in the show.
But as a fan, I tried to watch the first two After Treks, and I couldn't stand him because he was just so hyper and gave me nothing of substance. And so after the second episode, I decided, you know what, I'm just listening to Sean, because you guys, you're able to talk about what's going to happen to next week. And, you know, I say Sean because I also listen to Cosmic Potato, and John. But you guys can talk about what might happen next week, where on After Trek, they can't, or else a producer gets fired.
Right.
and so as a fan, I find the podcasts, the Star Trek Discovery podcast, much more entertaining and fulfilling than After Trek. After Trek is not something bad to have on if I was, like, say, cleaning the house and wanted just to continue to get more Star Trek in my life. But I could very easily just turn on a Bluetooth speaker and play podcasts.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and I, yeah.
And that's why I watched the show, because, you know, kind of, you know, at the risk of sounding more dismissive than it maybe needs to, you know, we take the bullet so you don't have to.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a lot of Discovery podcasts out there. I try to listen to a few of them, but I don't listen to them until after we record this show, because I don't want what I hear on that show to influence I say on this opinion. Show, because if I come out and say something that I heard on another podcast, I'm just going to feel like, well, I just stole that from somebody else, you know. But I did learn one piece of information on After Trek last night that I found a little bit interesting, in that Shahzad Latif said that they credited Javed Iqbal or whatever with the part of Vok. Well, Javed Iqbal was his father that passed away about 5 years ago, I think he said. So that was interesting that we finally found out where that name came from, because that seems like a very strange name to just pull out of thin air to make
a
fake.
Have you seen his Twitter? Have you seen his Twitter?
I saw where he said that he had been to a party with him or something like that a while back.
Well, there's the Javed Iqbal Twitter. He's constantly making now. I am a real actor, and it's like he's always using the phrase like what a real actor would do. It's hilarious.
You know, I just Googled Javed Iqbal, and unfortunately, that is also the name of a serial killer in Pakistan. So
hopefully, it's.
I mean, it is Vok. It is Vok.
Yeah, that's true. Hopefully, we don't find out that Jean Latif's father was a serial killer. Okay. Okay, so that's going to pretty much do it for this episode. I want to remind everyone that we have another podcast that comes out every week where we talk about other stuff besides Star Trek that we'd love for you to check out. It's Cosmic Potato, the Super Fan Talk podcast, and you'll find us doing that over at CosmicPotato.com. And as far as this show is concerned, you will always find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and of course over at simplysyndicated.com, where you'll also find a ton of great podcasts, some of which Rick hosts. And while you're there, while you're there, you should think about joining Simply Everything, where just a few dollars a month will get you access to their entire back catalog of shows, and it is hundreds and hundreds of hours of content. So we're on Facebook. We have a group called the group is just Simply Syndicated's Discovery After Show. I changed it to make it a little bit shorter, even though that is pretty long. we're trying to build a community for the listeners, so you can go there and tell us what you think of the last episode of Star Trek, what you think about this podcast, things that you like to hear us talk about. And we also have a way for you to send us a voicemail or a text message. You can call
205. As you heard tonight.
Yeah, right, yeah. Area code 205-642-8380. And I was actually told by one of our listeners from the UK that they can't send text messages through, or they can, but it costs them a lot of money to send text messages to that number. So if you want to just communicate with us through the Facebook page, that's fine. But anybody that sends us a voicemail or a text message, a Facebook message, or an iTunes review or something like that, we're going to put all those names into a hat. In the last episode, we're going to draw a name and we're going to give away a prize of some sort. Okay.
Your shitty book.
Yeah, probably not the book. I'm gonna make Rick give you his communicator he got for Christmas.
You can fight me for it.
All right, Brandon, thanks for being here tonight.
Thanks for having me on.
You want to tell everybody about your podcast?
Yeah, so I am one of the co-hosts of the Fandom Podcast, which you can find over at fandompodcast.com or in any of your podcast catchers. And we talk about Star Trek, we talk about Harry Potter, we talk about Doctor Who, we talk about TV, movies, comics, and books. And we do two episodes a week. The first episode is a news roundup, and then the second episode is a discussion. So yeah, you can find that over at fandompodcast.com or any podcatcher.
All right. And John, cool. Always good talk to you, sir.
Yeah, man.
And Rick, always a pleasure.
May Kalish give me the light to see forever.
Kalish!
Yeah.
Love Rick. Rick?
Yes?
Rick?
What? You're my tether, John.
All right, that'll do it for this episode of the show. We'll be back in next week to review the new episode, Vaulting Ambition. So we'll talk to you then. Good night.
Thank you for joining us for Simply Syndicated's Discovery After Show. Your feedback is welcome. Leave us a comment and review on iTunes or follow us on Facebook. The views and opinions stated on this program are those of the hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of Simply Syndicated, CBS, Paramount Pictures, or their sponsors. Star Trek Discovery is owned by CBS and has no affiliation with Simply Syndicated or this podcast. No infringement of copyrighted material is intended. Be sure to join us again next week as we analyze another episode of Star Trek Discovery here on Simply Syndicated's Discovery After Show.